United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Hello, welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strober, and my guest today is Philip Roth, who is a retired air pilot and also a retired fruit grower from here in Adams County, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Thank you.
To begin with, our conversation is centering around something that you did a few years ago that you just published in a new book entitled A Pox Adventure, 1954 through 1956. So my question to you is, what was the Pox program?
Mennonites, along with Quakers and Brethren, as a core belief, take a steadfast position on peace, that is, nonviolence and non-aggression. And a second core value is to be of service to humankind. And Pax was a program developed by the Mennonite Central Committee, which was a relief organization started in 1920, which represents most of the Mennonite relief activities around the world. The Pax program was initiated to comply with Selective Services 1W classification, known as alternative service workers. And the Act says that 1W workers, and I'm quoting, must contribute to the national health, safety, or interest. And Selective Service, in order to run the program, authorized and contracted with various agencies to hire and to manage these alternative workers. And one of those agencies was the MCC, of which most Mennonite and Brethren young men did their alternative service.
Okay.
With the Korean conflict starting in 1950, MCC structured the Pax program for single men of draft age for service overseas. They already had a volunteer service program for domestic alternative
service. Within the United States.
Pax operated for 25 years until the draft ended in 1975. And a good example would be my younger brother, who also did unusual work serving in South Korea, helping to set up and train administrative staff for a newly organized orphanage in South Korea.
Okay.
And I was granted an educational deferment for 2 years from Adams County's draft board. And when I graduated from that aeronautical school at age 20, I was expecting MCC to send me to Germany to rebuild homes and hospitals and churches after World War II.
Exactly.
But at the last minute, as I explain in the book, we could change to South America.
Oh, okay. You were involved in a number of projects there, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. Could you describe some of those projects?
Well, the major project was in Paraguay. There were three colonies. The first one was organized in 1927, and the second one was in 1930, when Russia, after the revolution in 1916, was shutting down immigration from the country. And in 1930, there was a worldwide depression, and there wasn't the United States and Canada and most developed countries around the world were not accepting immigrants. So the MCC fronted the transportation and the colony in Paraguay for those Mennonites and others who wanted to leave Russia.
Oh, okay.
Just before Russia closed the door to immigration. And then again in 1947, there were Russian refugees of German heritage trapped in Germany, but Germany was essentially destroyed after World War II. So in 1947, they were also moved by MCC to Paraguay.
Oh, okay.
Roughly 12,000 people in Paraguay in 1955.
Oh, I see. And in one of your projects was the road building initiative.
Yes, the colonies were located about 250 statute miles from the Asuncion, which was the point of their market, and they had no way to really get their markets except by horse and wagon.
Oh my, that would have taken a long time.
Well, to a railhead, 47 miles to a railhead, then 90 miles on a railroad, and then another 100-some miles downriver.
Okay. So the road project was an important piece.
It was indeed. It was economically necessary in order for the colonies to survive.
Okay. And how were you oriented to the program?
Well, MCC had this problem. How were they going to train 10 farm boys to run heavy construction equipment? And so they cut a deal with a renowned equipment manufacturer called R.G. Letourneau in Longview, Texas, to train us. And the deal was that we had 2 weeks in Texas, then we were flown to Peru, and we worked 6 months in Peru building a jungle road, and then transferred to Paraguay.
Okay. I think when I think about that type of adventure, I think of you have to be young to be able to want to explore. And when you just mentioned the jungle, you know, that sort of frightens me, and might frighten our listeners as well.
Well, it was indeed a new experience. I would say I wasn't frightened except for at night. It's incredibly impossible for anyone to imagine that both the volume and the strangeness of the wildlife in the jungle at night.
Oh, okay.
That was about the only thing that I was really concerned about. Well, we had no real reason to be in the jungle at night, so...
Okay. I think I would not get too much sleep. I just don't think so. And as you look at the men the young men who were chosen for the group, can you think of the criteria they used?
Well, we were quite an assorted bunch. There were four college graduates. But the oldest was 27, and I was among the four that were only 20. I don't really understand the majority of us. Of course, out of 10, we were all farm related, mm-hmm. So we were used to running farm tractors and equipment. And
exactly,
it was a fairly easy step up to running heavy tractors and bulldozers and turnip pulls, graders.
Okay, the language that is totally foreign to me growing up in Brooklyn, New York, I tell you. Okay, when you think about that experience and you write about this experience, how do you think the experience changed your life?
Well, I think as I think about it, the experience probably reinforced and intensified the values that I'd been taught from childhood. All those moral things like unconditional kindness and humility, to be generous and helpful. And in a material sense, I guess, it reinforced my earlier childhood experiences to be frugal and materially conservative. The colony people, for example, were ethnically German, and they were very resourceful and self-reliant. They tend to fix their own problems themselves, and at home in North America, we have a tendency to look to others or call to someone else to fix things. I think I learned to do things myself and to lean less on other people. It's interesting. After 2 years in Paraguay and Peru, coming home, the thing that I remember struck me the most was how wasteful we North Americans were.
Yeah,
for example, when we had to shower in 1.5 gallons of water. And I can't imagine anybody showering in 1.5 gallons of water. Persistent biting insects and rampant ant infestations. We had to put a cup of water or set the bedposts in a tin can partially filled with water in order to keep them out of the beds. And we were just generally unprepared for weather extremes. I remember never feeling so cold, even in temperatures slightly above freezing.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, because in the United States, we're usually prepared, you know, through the weather reports to know what's going to happen. And, you know, there, you don't have that type of communication. So, yeah, I can understand that. I can understand that. But following along, in terms of communication, you're away from family, and these were in the days before email, before texting, and before cell phones, and even the widespread use of telephones in many areas. How did you communicate with your family?
Well, the only way was letters. There was the telegraph, that was expensive. So letters took 10 days one way, back and forth. So it was, even if the recipient replied immediately, that was a 20 days make a cycle.
Almost a month.
Yeah.
Almost a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I wonder how your family felt about, you know, what they were thinking as you know, time went on and communication was so delayed.
Well, I've heard my siblings say that letters from me were a big deal.
Oh, okay. The importance of letters. And in this day and age, you know, we don't... letter writing is a lost art in many ways. Here, in terms of keeping up with you and what you were experiencing, the letter became the important communicative vehicle.
Yeah, the other thing was we sent, in those days, we had Kodachrome film, so all my pictures were sent to Kodak for processing and then directly home. So I never saw the pictures that I took, and of course they'd see these pictures, but they had huge questions about exactly what it was.
I bet, I'm sure.
Every now and then I'd get a letter from my dad, especially, who would say, well, this particular picture of such and such or this kind of machine was underexposed or overexposed. That gave me a chance to take another picture.
Right. That is good. That is good. There are many students in the contemporary period who travel abroad right after college. What benefits do you think this type of service has for people, young or old?
Well, I could illustrate that with my own experience. Was growing up as a middle class North American, life was easy, it was comfortable, and I had very few important worries. I lived on a farm in the country, and so I was gifted a used car at age 16 in order to get around. And I had that opportunity to learn to fly airplanes before graduating from high school, for a good example. And my college-educated parents introduced their four children to some of the finer things in life, as in classical music and music lessons and visiting museums, and we frequently had overnight guests and college friends from around the country and interesting family conversations. But I had little appreciation or understanding for other cultures outside North America. So this is a big advantage for doing the kind of work I do.
Yeah, it changes your worldview. But it also, I think, from students who have traveled or taken extensive trips during seminary or undergraduate work, it exposed them, it opened their worldview of the world.
Yeah, could I read an excerpt?
Please.
Here's what I wrote that addresses that problem, and this is a quote. None of the finer things in life we North Americans took for granted were accessible for them. That is, speaking about the Paraguayan. For example, hopefully anticipating the future, thinking about high ideals or principles, considering noble purposes, or simply vacationing with family or friends. These were unavailable luxuries. For some, it was a total sacrifice of illusions that gave North Americans comfort and hope, that is, to dream and to imagine possibilities. This is something that everybody, young or old, would learn from the kind of experience that I had.
Okay. Well, you chronicle the experience in your book, A Pax Adventure, Looking Back. Why did you want to write the book at this time?
Well, in 2015, my wife Norma and I were moving to a different house and downsizing. For reasons not quite understood, I felt driven to read my 60-year-old journal that I kept for those 2 years. And also read the letters that I had written home that my parents saved. And then I began to realize that the We Ten Pax Men had contributed in some small way to something consequential and perhaps historically significant. Now, I'm not an academic nor a professional writer, but I decided to research the archives and write down a simple, straightforward account to kind of hopefully explain what happened in those 2 years. And partway into the project, I began to understand that however modest, there might be something general, of general interest to everyone and to future historians and researchers. And so I wanted to leave an informational trace alongside a few human interest stories and pictures.
Oh, okay. Then what do you hope people will gain from reading it?
Well, it is an easy read. It's conversational, and I hope readers will find the stories enjoyable. But I did it mostly for its historical value. I wanted to explain what happened in those 2 years. And the memoir aspect of the book was a very different experience and should be interesting from an adventure viewpoint. If the reader learns something about the mid-20th century South America, that'll be very satisfying to me. And if you want to draw a line between the secular and the sacred, the MCC initiative on two fronts should be remembered by readers. The first is that how a 250-mile stretch of Pan-American highway system came into existence. The road that was built eventually became Route 9 on the Pan-American highway system.
Oh, fantastic.
And the book explains why that happened and actually explains why it is that what we did would be considered in the national interest. There'll be a full explanation in that in the book. And the second thing that everyone should take away from the book is how a new Western Hemisphere standard for the treatment of indigenous people as expressly moral happened. In 1931, the Mennonites, for example, started a mission to the friendly indigenous to study their language, and to everybody's great surprise, the indigenous were pliant and learned German first, which is kind of amazing. And the other thing was that they didn't remove the indigenous to a remote location of poor land, and many years later, the Caucasian settlement actually extends and encompasses the indigenous settlement.
Oh,
so that the indigenous are now part of the community.
Okay.
So these are things that are pointed out in the book.
Good. It changed the demographics.
It really did.
That's right. Well, I can't believe that our time is is up. And I just want to thank you for sharing this adventure that happened to you in your early 20s. And certainly, hopefully, will bring memories to those of us who were traveling abroad, South America, Europe, Africa, during that same period, or even now. My guest today has been Phil Roth, who is the author of A Pack's Adventure, Looking Back.
You have been listening to
From
the
1954
Explores,
to 19,
a production of United
56.
Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg,
this is
Pennsylvania,
Nelson
and
Thank you.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.